I'm muy cansado. Stop asking me so many preguntas. And they go, whoa, shit, he also knows questions. And I go, that's right. 500 and like almost 30 days of Duolingo later, I'm almost not even remotely fluent in Spanish. You're welcome, nice. Everybody. Nice, exactly.
That bird sure is doing its job, teaching you a different language.
Duolingo. Are you saying it right? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Map says I am, but I don't think so. Duolingo. What's an owl got to do with learning anyway? Fucker didn't even know how many licks it took to get... Are they, though? Didn't know how many licks it takes to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop.
I mean, he could have found out. It's just that his lust for that the Tootsie Roll within the candy shell was just too much. He only ever got to three. Which is like... That is an impulse control problem, I think. That owl, it needs a little help because... I don't know. I don't think you... Three licks? That's all you got to? I feel like you could get to 15 easy. But no, he's like, a one, a two, a three. Give me that fucking Tootsie Roll.
Let's go. You know we gotta keep it hype all day and night like this. Showing love when we can. Shout out to the super fans, You don't really want to miss Pop Soccer, stay lit. So if you ready, we ride and take it back to the 90s. From movies to the video games, just a couple of nerds keep it so entertaining. Hey, Pop Soccer.
Welcome back, mutants and Pop Soccer enthusiasts, to another electrifying episode of Pop Soccer. Get ready to dive into the world of mutants as we unpack the latest buzz surrounding the highly anticipated revival of the X-Men 97 cartoon, from the dynamic duo of Cyclops and Jean Grey to the enigmatic Wolverine and the magnetic, well, Magneto. We'll be delving deep into the mutant mayhem and nostalgia, but folks, that's not all. We've also had some thrilling new trailers that are bound to set some fandoms alight, or maybe some people alight. Who knows? I'm Jombit, the raging San Franciscan who has the ability to charge any item with the hottest of takes. And alongside me is our resident funny path, Maestro Force. So, to me, my Pop Saga pals, join us on this exhilarating journey through the realms of mutant kind and cinematic wonders right here on Pop Saga.
Oh, John, you make the best etouffee and beignets.
You know I do. You know I do. But you know what? I'm going to give you one of the hottest takes there is. Cafe Dumont, their beignets, ain't that great.
What?
Hottest. That's right. I got the hottest takes all night.
That's right. That is right. Wow, here we go. Hard to imagine that we were finally at the day that we get to talk about new X-Men cartoon that is a direct continuation of the old 90s X-Men cartoon, as much as that theme song I just played alluded to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Definitely. We've been waiting for a while. They've announced it, and I don't know about you, but I just kind of sat there and went like, eh, I'll wait and see when it's out.
Well, my expectations couldn't have been higher, John. I was waiting. I was practically on the edge of my seat waiting for this thing, biting my nails down to the nub. Will it be good?
But how though? Because you saw the 92. Show you were live during that time. Hell, we just watched it. Hell, yeah. I just did a Pop Saga, you know, whatever classic, and where we talked about it, not again, but you know, rebroadcast it, and we didn't really seem to like that one. So how could you be eagerly anticipating something that wasn't so good back then?
I just have a tremendous affection for that run of the X-Men. The design, the stories, the sort of... It was very high concept back then, and which I really much, very much enjoyed. And the cartoon got pretty close. It definitely dealt with a lot of like the more out there concepts that you see in X-Men comics. And I don't know. It was never a show like Batman, the animated series, where I was just like hooked and I adored it. And it was just like this thing that was so important to me and so like monumental in my development as a creative. It was more just like, it was like an earnest attempt to bring a very good, like what I would say was probably the most, I don't know, I don't have anything to back this up, but it was certainly a monumental force to be reckoned with back in the 90s, the X-Men, that is. And especially this, the run back in the 90s. I think even if you look back at those costumes and everything, everything was so iconic. They were hitting on all cylinders. And it was really great to see some of that vibe captured and brought into a cartoon, you know, a cartoon. Mm. And it was kind of... I remember it being very, like, it was very much marked by the fact that it was constantly trying to get one over on the censors. Or at the very least, like, it was constantly trying to, like, to push the boundaries of what the cartoon could contain content-wise. They didn't always succeed, but I think that it is just such an interesting dynamic that was... you know, gave birth to this cartoon. So yeah, not every episode works for me. And I don't even honestly remember that many episodes. If I just am like, hey, what's an episode you loved, Forrest? I'm like, I have no idea which episodes were there. Show me a list and maybe I'll recognize one. But for whatever reason, I have a tremendous amount of affection, for this era of X-Men.
I mean, I get that. I mean, it was everywhere. It's still the, largest like sale of comic book single issues of all time was X-Men number one, with that super cover that has been duplicated, replicated like countless times for sure. And yeah, it gave us a lot of iconic designs, some really cool, some maybe questionable, some, you know, a natural evolution of the characters' outfits as well. And yeah, Jim Lee was the hotness, so it made sense to give him, you know, like his own cartoon. And don't get me wrong, when it was on, I was rushing home to watch it because superhero anything was okay by me. But even like back in the day, I was watching going like, this show's okay, but it's not this Batman show, like in terms of like quality and bar, and I'm not just talking the animation, but writing. And you do bring up a valid point that, you know, X-Men comic books are out there and they do kind of deal with some real, they can deal with some real deep themes that probably wouldn't make it onto TV. But sometimes I'd watch that show and feel like no censor watched it. You know, like they just kind of
definitely stuck some stuff through. Yeah.
You know, and but I mean, if anything, I'll give it the theme song. I think that theme song is amazing. It, you know, it pops, it rocks, but everything else, everything that I remember from the past and even kind of trying to rewatch it and then this coming out kind of tempered my expectations. But we also know here comes John's hardest take number two. I've just lost the total accent. Hold on. More on me. Here I go. Here, give me the F duvet. Here we go. Here's another hottest take. Brother, everybody know this hottest take. X-Men, they're okay, but they're not my favorite.
That's your hot take?
That's my hot take.
Is that X-Men are not the thing that you prefer?
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, no, in a world of comic bookdom, like to, like, to badmouth the X-Men, which is, yeah, pretty much, it feels like it's universally loved. I've not been able to find a support group for me, but definitely like a lot of love out there for it. The fact that I'm just like, eh.
You're just as on the X-Men as a whole, not like not just this cartoon or a certain run of comics. You are just saying the X-Men in general you're very nonplussed about them.
Yeah, there are specific runs and things that I've gone like, okay, this is the X-Men to me. This is how I think of the X-Men. But most of the time, I just think of like Executioner song and all the when they pulled out all the metal out of Wolverine for some reason to give him bone claws. You know, like that era really just kind of, I think, almost tainted anything that I like about the X-Men. And again, I have characters that I like from the X-Men, but usually X-Men as a whole or like their issues, I'm like, meh.
Wow. Meh. That is a hot take.
Thank you. Yeah. I told you I was coming. John B. coming with the hottest of takes.
I can't believe when they introduce Gambit, basically, they're like, Rogue is making beignets.
That's what I'm saying.
Anyway,
it's not that ain't even a meal. That's a dessert. But anyway, whatever.
Before we get into it, let's talk about the thing we came here to talk about, I guess. Well, at least the thing that people came here to hear us talk about. And that's right. It's everybody's favorite segment. What are you enjoying this evening? John, why don't you kick us off?
Well, I'm taking a slight repass from the booze. Just trying to deal with some neck pain, and I don't want to aggravate it. But
not drinking alcohol tonight, and that's okay. Don't worry about it, John. What do you got? Is it water?
Nope. I was granted a bottle from my lovely wife, Tanya, of Coca-Cola Spiced. That's right. I have a pseudo-soda review.
Gross.
Yep. It's raspberry spiced Coke and other natural flavors.
Spiced with what?
Raspberry and spiced. Ooh,
it's
whoa.
Got some paprika in there. That's all that means, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, ooh, ooh, okay. Whoa, that smell.
Seems
that
like
is strong.
Got a heck of a nose.
Yeah, okay, hold on. I'm kind of scared. All right, let's go.
First scary sip down the hatch. What's John going to think of this drink? Let's tune in. There is some weird sounds coming from his side of the call.
Oh, wow. It kind of tastes like Christmas.
Huh?
Like if you were to, like, all the smells and spice and of Christmas.
Okay.
Weird. That is, and this is the first one I honestly would say it doesn't just taste like Coke sprinkled with something.
Okay.
This tastes different. I'm gonna go with one more sip. I don't know if it's a good thing.
Okay.
It is a thing.
Transporting John back to Christmas, December 25th, the weather, baby Jesus popped out into the world and gave us spice Coke, and John's drinking it now.
Oh. Yeah, like
you think of the spice Coke, John?
I feel like if you used it in a bread baking thing, like a spice bread or spice like banana bread loaf or something, it would work pretty good because it barely has a hint of raspberry. It is definitely whatever their spiced flavor is. Oh, that blew out my nostrils. Okay. Don't do it. There you go. Oh, wow. Yeah, Coca-Cola spiced. Tastes like Dune, I guess.
Tastes like Dune.
Yeah.
The Coca-Cola spice must blow.
I feel like it's probably from one of the Fremen still suits catch pockets.
Oh,
more the aftertaste gets me. So that's what I had. Makes me just wish I'd rather drink something. What do you drink?
Oh, well, tonight we have a special cocktail for all of you Pop Saga pals out there. This one I'm going to call Strawberry Good.
Okay.
It is... What you do is you take 2 ounces of your favorite vodka, pour that in a tall glass, and then fill that glass up with ice, and then top all of that with strawberry soda. I use the one from Trader Joe's as my way when I am building my cocktails.
Sure.
You top that with a wedge of lime that you squeeze over the top, and then you drop the whole thing in there. And you know what I like to do when you got a little sweet little cocktail? You know what I like to do? You sprinkle a little salt on there. Wow. You balance out the flavor, and then you're going to mix that all around because you got a carbonated ingredient in there. You don't want to shake it. You're going to mix it all around. And you got yourself a delicious cocktail, especially if you get this soda from Trader Joe's. 60 calories for like a littler bottle, so it's not much better for you than a Coke, but oh, is it good? It tastes like a strawberry candy.
That sounds tasty. So is this a part of your normal repertoire? Mm.
I'll tell you what, it is now. No, I've made it once or twice before. I don't always like to get sugary drinks in the old household, so I don't have it all that often. In fact, my go-to drink, if I'm just like hanging around at home and I want a little something to, make the day that much more forgettable, I guess.
Tolerable, I get it.
Then I go for a tequila soda. That's my go-to.
That's your go-to.
Yep, a Reposado style tequila overs with a mix with soda water, a little bit of lime, and you know what I'm gonna say next? A little bit of salt. I'm cuckoo for putting salt in my cocktails.
I probably shouldn't, but here I go. Well, I mean, you know, you do you.
And I will, and yeah. I have.
Good.
Indeed, indubitably. But let's turn down for what? Let's get into talking about X-Men 97, premiered on Disney Plus just recently. And it came out of the gate with a two-part series premiere. That's episode one of X-Men 97, was called To Me, My X-Men.
It said directed, just like that.
Yep. It was directed by Jake Castorena. Jake Castorena. So one of those is right. Pick the one that's right.
Pick the one that sounds right to you.
Mm-hmm.
My X-Men.
That might, yep. Pronounce it for me, My X-Men. And it was written by Bue DeMeo, and Stan Lee also gets a credit, as does Jack Kirby. And, hey, a lot of your favorites are back. We got Ray Chase as Cyclops, Jennifer Hale as Jean Grey, Allison Seeley Smith as Storm, Cal Dodd as Wolverine, J.P. Karliak as Morph, Lenore Zahn as Rogue, George Buza?
Yeah, I think it's Buza.
Very cool. As Beast, AJ Lo Cassi. Wow, I do not know how to pronounce that one.
It's Lo Cassio.
Lo Cassio. I was on the right track, and I gave up on myself. I should have had more. He's kind of dressed like Gambit in his IMDb picture, so perfect casting. Holly Chow as Jubilee. Isaac Robertson-Smith as Bishop. Matthew Watterson as Magneto. And Ross Marquand as Professor X. We also have a bunch of other characters that I won't go into. But that's your core X-Men team. And then episode two is called The Mutant Liberation Begins.
MLB, Major League Baseball, it's a conspiracy.
That one was directed by Chase Conley.
And written by Bo DeMaio.
Yep, again. All the same stars for the most part, except Jeff Bennett as America Judge.
Most important character.
That's right.
American Judge, yeah.
And of course, Terry Douglas stars as additional voices.
Important.
Yeah.
Important. Hey,
every single actor is important. Fantastic. So, John, when did you end up checking that? Did you run over right when it dropped and checked it out, or did you kind of take a more leisurely pace? What was your journey to the X-Men 97?
We slow rolled it. So I think when it came out last Wednesday. So, you know, we slow rolled it. We watched it on a Thursday because I was going to rush out there like everybody else. I wasn't going to go out there and be like, I got to be first in line to watch this. No, I got other things to do. I got other shows to watch. It's very important, important that I don't. I need to make sure I do not forget those lyrics. So I'm going to check that out before I'm going to just rush right into X-Men 97. But now we caught it up. Sure. We caught it Thursday. Yeah. How about you? Were you there at 12:01 on a Tuesday night?
I wasn't on the 12:01 Tuesday night, but on Wednesday morning, before work started, if anyone's from work is listening, I watched both episodes.
He was working and watching that. That's right. I'm narking him out. Hottest take number three. I know what Forrest is doing most days.
Howdy, dearie. I watched it as soon as it was available, and you know, these aren't like super long episodes. They're basically sticking to the Saturday morning cartoon format. So it's a quick watch to watch both, and I tell you, I couldn't stop. I watched that first episode and I'm like, gimme more. And then I ended the second episode and I said to myself, where's more? And then Disney Plus said, no.
You will wait.
You'll get it every Wednesday, not Saturday morning, like would make sense. No. We'll premiere it on a Wednesday, even though we're a streaming service, we can do that anytime.
Now we need to make sure that we boost those DAUs, those daily active users.
Yeah, when you release is actually important.
Very much so. Very much so. And I, you know, in most shows, I kind of appreciate the slow roll in it, you know, like so we can have the water cooler talk and people just can't binge it. But I hate to admit it, but I think I'm kind of with you. It's just like, you could give me more.
I could go with a smidge. I could go with a dollop more.
Yeah, you can put a little extra on my plate. I'm not that full yet. Just go ahead. Just throw that on top of the other prime rib. Please give me more.
Yeah. And John, you might be... Well, I think you already know this about me, but I'm a big Cyclops fan and have been.
Yeah.
Forever. Yeah, before it was cool, when it still wasn't cool, later, when it really wasn't cool. I'm a real stand-by-your man when it comes to loving Cyclops.
You are. I can't attest to this. Ever since I've known you, the two things you were like, hi, my name is Forrest, and I like Cyclops. And I was just like, well, I like one of those things. This partnership is formed.
And that's right. We both like Cyclops.
No, it's Cyclops in the comics has always gotten a dirty rap. You know, either he's a goody-goody two-shoes or, you know, depending on which run you're getting, maybe they're trying to make him too edgy and it's too much.
He does get pretty edgy at times. I've read some comics where it was like, whoa, Boise.
And every time they took him in that direction, I was always like, nah. It was almost the same thing when they were like, you know what's going to make Aquaman cool? We're going to cut his hand off, give him a harpoon, and then we're going to grow his hair out, and he's going to be so cool. That didn't work. Well, that didn't work on me. Might have worked on some people. And doing that with Cyclops was the same thing. I was like, no, like, you should keep the character as the way he is. People hate him, and just leave it there. Stop trying to make him cool. It's not going to happen.
Cyclops is a very interesting character, and the archetype, I think, is very interesting as well, because... I think the rule-following archetype is a super fun one to play with, especially in a show or a medium, a story like X-Men stories, which are constantly dealing with like gray areas and like how people perceive other people, and the want or like the desire to be consistently like follow the rules at every opportunity is constantly being tested and is being challenged by like the choices that that you must make in the situations mm-hmm. that Cyclops is constantly put in. That's why I like Cyclops. That's why I like Captain America. When you have someone with like a really strong moral ethical code, and then it's constantly like the stories are trying to bend and break it, and you see how this person responds. I think it's super interesting. I do kind of like that they, in the comics, that they have had Cyclops do these really wild character swings. Because he always comes back to the sort of moral center, but they have really, I mean, there was that, the Phoenix Saga, and the Krakoan Saga, which is just recently, which is just it's very cool, actually. It's bringing the X-Men back to the kind of like the wild, more experimental style stories that we were used to seeing in the comics in the 90s. I think the most recent run of the X-Men has definitely had some of that DNA in it. But Cyclops has got up to some wild antics on that one too. Anyway, all I'm trying to say is I'm a huge Cyclops fan, and Cyclops rules this series.
You ready for a hot take from John Bono me? You ready to get some E2Face stuffed in your face?
Let's hear it.
I agree with you. This is the first time I've ever liked Cyclops.
Oh my God.
This is about as good as a representation I've ever seen of what they tried to do with Cyclops. Because sometimes you're right. In certain runs, I think he's a great leader. Like, I love all new X-Men, and mm-hmm. when they bring in like young Cyclops dealing with old Cyclops and all that stuff, I think that was some really like excellent like Cyclops. Same thing with Astonishing X-Men. I think, you know, don't care for the writer anymore as a human being, but you know, in terms of that run and getting as closer to the X-Men, I think that was really cool on that one. But in terms of this show, yeah, Cyclops is cool, and it didn't feel very forced to me. It just naturally occurred.
I was thinking about like where the perception of Cyclops comes from, and I think that like part of it is when this show was out, it was just like more, I think it was just cooler to like Wolverine because he was brash and he has cool claws, and he was also like always the underdog. You know, if you yourself ever felt like an underdog, Wolverine definitely has that that feeling about him. And so it always kind of made Cyclops into like the goody two shoes type role. But I think it wasn't as exacerbated in the show as much as it was in the Bryan Singer X-Men movies, which really relegated him to like second tier character status and just like a completely one dimensional character. He is just like the angry, jealous boyfriend and like the annoying guy who's always reminding everybody else of the rules that like no one in the movies even seems to like.
I mean, kind of rightfully so. I think you are correct. It was very singular focused, and growing up during Wolverine time, guess what? I don't like Wolverine either.
Jesus, God, it's just all oops, all hot takes tonight.
I told you. I've said it numerous times. I make fun of Wolverine and Gambit and Cyclops to a little bit, but really, Wolverine, I can't like. It's just because he is overplayed out. And the focus on him when, yeah, it is a team and a team effort was always something that that never grokked with me. That's why when I look at X-Men, it's all about like Iceman and Cyclops and Kitty Pryde and like almost like the auxiliary members that are usually not showing up all the time. Those were my favorites. Those are the ones that I could glom onto. But like Cyclops and Wolverine's like, ugh. But heaven forbid that this show do something that makes me go like, I like Cyclops. What can I say? You won. You won.
finally, the cows have come home to roost.
And it's the perfect like synthesis of what you're looking for, not just one aspect, as you kind of called out from the movies or anything else, and not the like the forced Captain America-esque, because I was going to, when you were talking about it, I was going to be like, yes, he's like Captain America, but not as cool. Right? But in this instance, I would say he's almost as cool as Captain America.
Yeah,
and that's the highest praise I could give anybody.
Yep, that's that. We know that about you. That Captain America, as cool as Captain America, is at the top of your ratings list. But what I think the show does better than any other time I've ever seen Cyclops outside of perhaps a video game is showcase how rad his powers are. One of the reasons I have always loved Cyclops is not necessarily just because of his personality, but I just love his power set. Those ruby red beams are cool as hell, and I love that they're actually kinetic force and not like they don't heat things up. That's super rad. And then I think I remember that one time the explanation for his powers is that his eyes are portals to a different dimension that is just filled with this kinetic energy, which is wild. And I don't know if that's still canon. But,
Lord, I hope not. I hope not. That sounds that would be the second or no, excuse me, like the third, no shit, fourth X-Men that has portal based powers.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of portals going on over at the
expansion. Yeah, come on. Stop explaining it that way. Stop. Just say he's just like a super charged solar battery that shoots death beams out his eyes.
Yeah. Exactly. Just like I like the way he moves in this show.
You ain't wrong. You ain't wrong when he comes out there and he's just he's using the optic blast to move around, like literally so move cool. around. I'm like, holy shit.
He's just scooting around the floor using his optic blast as a like a propulsion device. It's so cool.
Yeah,
and then like
dope.
All his fighting technique paired with the optic blasts, it was just great. And they're beating up bigots, which makes you feel good.
Yeah, you don't feel bad about him shooting or blasting or punching any of them at all.
Yeah. Super, super fucking cool. And I felt like this is maybe the first time we've seen Storm treated as like the near god that she is portrayed as in the comics. Like the way how people are scared of her and how the Sentinels are scared of her in this show is rad as hell.
Yeah, totes. It's Storm. Like, I love when the Sentinel's like, Omega threat, Omega level threat detected. I was like, yes, put some respect on Storm's name. She will blow you up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's so powerful. And yes, this is finally like getting like Storm at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was great. It was great. Shit. Even Jubilee.
Sure. She's cool too.
She's got her dance moves and she was lighting up the dance floor. I love that. I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else she did, but that was cool.
I don't
remember.
Yeah. I mean, we get a lot of, I think maybe the best fight scene in this two episode premiere is all the X-Men versus the Sentinels. Because not only is it cool as heck, but it also, it like they kick on the theme song during the fighting, and you're just like, great! All of my neurons, all of my endorphins and serotonin receptors are just going crazy right now. You're giving me everything I could have possibly wanted.
No, you're right. And we finally got something that I never thought we'd get in an X-Men cartoon for us.
What?
Sentinels at a scale that just stayed at one scale.
Oh, yeah, that was great. Yeah, it was a consistent scale.
You know, sometimes they're as big as a house. Sometimes they're as big as a mall. Sometimes they're as small as a single-story flat. But this one, they were all consistent. And it was just, it was a nice... return to form, like really mirroring the first episode, and then having this one be the first episode back, still kind of dealing with the Sentinels and stuff. Really appreciated that.
Yeah, because at this point, like this, if you're not aware, this show takes place directly after the finale of the old show that premiered in the 90s. It literally picks up right where the old one left off. And if you're not familiar, in a kind of wild twist at the end of the run of the series, they kill Charles Xavier. Well, Professor X is dead.
Well, wait, I seem to, maybe I'm misremembering something, and please correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I thought he actually didn't die. I thought because he got shot by that death, like the bullet, Lalandra and them took him off to the Shi'ar Empire. I thought that was the last episode.
Did they poochie him?
I think they poochied him.
Because there's a whole, I remember very clearly a whole scene where everyone's saying goodbye to Professor X.
Yeah, but I remember like Lalandra's like, we have the technology, because he's like trapped in his mind or something like that. You know, she's like, we might have the technology that could heal him. And then he 23 skidoos in a ship and bombs off. That's what I remember. But I was so afraid after my re-rewatch of the first episode that I did not want to go back. So I might be misremembering something else. I don't
what, so know. This is just from the dome?
This is from the dome. So, but I don't remember. That's why I'm asking you. But I remember, I didn't actually think he was dead. I just think that he was like in some super like coma or something in the Shi'ar Empire. Flew off with Lalandra. Because remember, she showed up constantly in the original show.
Uh-huh. That's no, what I remember. Yeah, that whole Shi'ar Empire thing. It looks like you might be right, but and how is this a continuation?
I don't know.
Of that, everyone's acting like he's dead. Unless
I mean, you see his last will and testament, and then you see like his death certificate.
Yeah, so, his like body lying in state and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Just going from what I remember.
Well, this is a this is very interesting. I guess we'll have to do, I guess maybe I should have done more research. But this doesn't make any sense. This doesn't make any sense.
I mean, they could have retconned it. Look, the same thing with his spoiler. We're jumping around, right? We're not like walking through these episodes like through and through.
These are our impressions, or that's what it says in the intro.
No, great.
Or not the intro, the title.
Well, Magneto calls out how he needed his helmet to protect him from Xavier. Fun fact, that actually didn't happen until the Singer movie.
So that's a little bit of retconning right there.
Retconning as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if you're like, you know what? He did. Yeah, let's just say he did. Even though we'll still keep him in the title sequence and also have a voice actor assigned to him, but he did trust us. But then again, it's, you know, superheroes, no one ever stays dead forever. So
yeah, I would be surprised if Charles stays dead this entire, especially if he's just in space and everyone's like, oh, wait a second, that's where he went. Oh, I thought for sure he was dead.
Yeah, I just think he was sent to space because his brain broke. That was it. His brain was broken.
And he wasn't killed. He wasn't killed by this guy who's in prison at the start of this series for assassinating Charles. And then also basically ushering in a new era of goodwill towards mutants because of the sympathy generated by this. That's No, sorry, my X-Men. I was in space. I was the Shi'ar are quite fetching to the eye. Don't you agree, Cyclops?
He'll probably be like, no, but my dad's up there hanging out with him, so that's cool.
You see me run into my dad,
the space pirate. Remember?
I've got a hard to explain baby that I need to introduce him to.
Oh, it will get harder too. Holy smokes. Oh, But I mean, I'm okay if they retcon it or whatever they're doing with that. I'm not so like, I wasn't so taken aback. But while watching that, I was like, I don't remember him being dead. I just remember him being like not awake. That's how I remember it.
I guess that could have been a bit of censorship on the side of just making it a kid's cartoon, but it's like
they could have duped him.
He's went to sleep. Oh, I see. It's all like they don't show any of this. It's all exactly. Just like a static screen of Cyclops.
Yeah, it's all ADR. You know, it's from the back.
He's getting in a Shi'ar spaceship right now. Oh, there he goes into the sky.
Hopefully they'll be able to fix him one day. You know, and then that was it type of thing. I mean... just saying, that's how I remembered it. So when watching this, it's like, okay, but like it didn't make me go, fuck this show and its inconsistencies. If anything, I was so engrossed by it, and I think as good as the first episode was, that second episode made me go, holy shit, on another level. And it wasn't even like that; it was like that crazy fighting or anything, but. Story and plot was like superb.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting what they ended up doing with this series, because not only does it capture the feeling and vibe of the 90s cartoon fairly well, using sort of modern animation techniques, but in a way that definitely is inspired by the 90s cartoon. But they have really brought it forward and evolved it and created something that is much more mature and interesting. And it pulls off this feat that I think all good remakes aspire to, which is to make you feel like this is how it's always been, like, or to make it as good as it is in your memory, but much better in reality than the actuality of it, because you know how our memories tend to candy coat things. And this very much is just like, oh wow, this is just what it felt like to watch this as a kid, except I even then probably better.
Oh, I mean, I ain't gonna be a snob, but I knew the animation back then wasn't that great. But this was a true like evolution of the style in the right direction, like a blend with, like, you know, I'm thinking the Sentinels were 3D with paint over 2D type of stuff, and then the animation itself was actually 2D because of all the painterly backgrounds and stuff. But it was really well blended. It just felt like, yeah, if this show never stopped and they're like, hey, you know what, we're still doing well, let's up the animation budget, like this feels like where they could land on. Because it was super crisp and still had that invocative of the, like, 92 series. It was a really, I think, it's actually a very successful blend of it.
Yeah. So in the background, I've been doing a little bit of research, and it looks like this doesn't make anything less confusing. So out there, if you're hoping that I would have a little bit of information that would make things less confusing, I'm sorry. But since we see the scene of the series finale that show Professor Xavier dying in a hospital bed, and this scene does occur in X-Men the Animated Series, but after that, what happens is what you described happens, which is to say, like, he dies and is like, goodbye, my X-Men, and then Lilandra comes down and is like, all right, we can take him to the planet, Shi'ar planet. And we'll heal him right up. See you later, skaters. And so I guess maybe this is something we'll find out as we watch X-Men 97, is that maybe both things can be true. Maybe the X-Men have been brainwashed somehow, maybe by Charles Xavier himself, into thinking he's dead in order to create this exact situation in which his old friend, Magneto, is able to redeem himself, because that's what the second episode in this two episode premiere is really about, which is the ending of the first episode gives us this this big shocker in the fact that Magneto's back. He's got an all new Granny Goodness outfit on. He's rocking.
Yeah, I mean it's his do-gooder '80s outfit.
Yeah, but it really put me in mind of Granny Goodness for some reason. That's the Granny Goodness, a character from the DC universe from Apocalypse.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, like when your gloves go up that high, yeah, might as well just have sleeves. Just saying.
Yeah, like, well, you know, maybe he spent a lot of time working on those pumpkins, you know what I mean?
Obviously.
Those pumpkins, and he's got to show them off. I mean, if I'm his age and I've got a body like that, I'm cutting holes in every single part of my outfit.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, true, to be fair. If I look like him, I'm not even wearing a shirt.
No. Yeah, I would just paint the M on my chest and then just be like, to me, my X-Men.
You need to put on pants. It's like, nope, you're getting everything, damn it.
Charles would have put on pants. You need to put on pants.
At the very least, he would have sat down.
No, not today. Magneto's feeling thirsty. But yeah, thirst trap Magneto shows up and turns out that Charles left him everything. So meanwhile, cool Scott Summers, finally cool Cyclops, thought he was going to lead the team. No dice. Magneto's back. And, you know, Scott is being maybe the only rational person in this group. Everyone seems pretty accepting of Magneto, but Scott's like, do you remember who this is?
It's not a good dude.
This guy sucks. He was constantly trying to kill everyone. Don't you remember? Everyone's like, Scott, come on.
Chill out, Scott. Come on. Come on. Come on. He's fine. He's fine.
And then Magneto is arrested by the United Nations and put on trial.
Yep.
But good thing the bigots are a bunch of idiots and use that opportunity to just make him look even better.
Yeah. I wonder.
It's like, almost as if that was planned.
Yeah, just a little bit. I'm trying to figure out where all these, whether it's been planned or if this just happens to be a coincidence. I don't know. I don't know.
Hard to say, but it is, I mean, wowza. Big seismic changes at the end of this episode because, like, they're thinking about adding Genosha to the UN.
I know, that's nuts.
Yeah. Anyway, nuts. Like, in one episode, he's made more progress than the entire previous series combined.
Yeah, definitely. Then it made more progress than cool Cyclops.
That's right. And all it took was transporting all the leaders into space, almost smashing the bad guy's skull and just being like, I could crush you like worms, but I'm trying to be a good guy.
Please don't make me let you down. Was the coldest. Cool, it was super cool, super cold line I've ever heard someone utter wearing gloves that long.
Yeah, and truly a remarkable amount of restraint by Magneto. Considering that Storm gets her powers completely sapped from her by this evil do-batter.
Yeah, Executioner Gesundheit.
Very cool, though. I found him to be very scary. He really dispatches the team of X-Men in a way that was like, oh, I thought that they were good at this.
I appreciated that. Sometimes you just need people who aren't powered to fight the X-Men but still hold their own, and that was kind of cool to see him do that. It was just just weird watching him put, like, draining them collars to put it in his steampunk gun. I'm gonna shoot you with the power of steam.
Yep, that's right. It had a bunch of he had to shovel some coal in it.
Coal had vacuum tubes, a couple cogs, I think, definitely made out of brass and wood. Like, it was a stylized piece, but he was terrifying, But then just to see, again, kind of Magneto just do Magneto things without it looking silly. Like, I mean, I was, it highlighted how powerful Magneto is as well. Like, when he's not really gesticulating with his hands, but things are moving, you know, you go like, holy shit, Magneto is super powerful. Like,
yeah. His power was really on display. The entirety of these two episodes. I also, speaking of powers, I have to call out Morph, who Morph is incredible. They took a character who was like pretty much a joke in the original cartoon, and they're like, "How about we make this character super cool and also, I don't know, one of the most powerful X-Men ever?" Because I don't know the extent at which he can. Or sorry, the extent in which they, because Morph is a, they were very clear that Morph is a non-binary character, which is super cool.
Yep.
But I don't know at the extent which they can use the powers of the people that they duplicate, but I mean, they certainly used Angel's powers.
Well, I mean, it was Angel, Blob, Colossus, Psylocke, Lady Deathstrike.
Yeah. Like, is Morph the most powerful X-Men?
I would say so. It's weird because, like, Morph, the character Morph originally, if I remember correctly, was created for the cartoon.
Yeah, so because they could kill them off in the first episode.
Well, I think originally they're supposed to kill someone else in the first episode, but they killed Morph instead. But but in terms of Morph's power is very much like Mimics, who also mm-hmm. died in the comic book. And Mimic just really looked like Beast as a human, because he just had them big old feet, but he just wore like a crazy costume.
Sure.
So I think they eventually ended up bringing Morph to the comics, but I don't think this Morph or the other one like could do their powers
mm-hmm.
like that, because if he can replicate people's powers, they can replicate people's powers, that's super powerful.
I mean, seriously,
you won.
I was shocked because they introduce Mimic. Or sorry, they introduce Morph. We're talking all these Mimic Morphs, all these crazy M names. They introduce Morph by like just having Charles Xavier walk into like the kitchen at wherever house they're at. Doesn't seem like they're at the mansion. It just seems like they're in the suburbs.
Felt like they're using the guest house or something.
Yeah, or something. And you're like, oh, that's all that Morph is going to do, is just going to like impersonate people. No, the power set comes along with it. And if that's the case, like just like, are there more Morphs? Because we could just use a team of Morphs, please.
You just need one. Just get you one Morph and you're good.
Yeah. Can they like recreate the most powerful mutant ever? Like, can they recreate like Franklin Richards type powers where they're just rewriting reality at a whim?
I wish I knew, because seeing the powers in motion made me believe that they had the ability to use those powers, at least some element of them. Because when they turned to Cyclops, was just, and not Cyclops, Colossus, just got shot. There was no problem there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Makes me very curious to see how far that goes, because that is just a, that is a very cool power set and a very, like an Omega level mutant, it would seem.
You'd think so.
You would think.
I think so.
If that's not Omega, then what is?
What is?
The big twist that really kind of has you salivating for the next episode, though, is at the end. We should say that throughout these two episodes, Jean Grey is in it, and she is pregnant. She gives birth in the second episode to baby, little baby, Gene and Scott. And then when they're back at the suburban center for gifted children or whatever it's called, another Jean Grey shows up. If you're familiar with the comics, this is a storyline that you probably know the outcome to, but it was fascinating to see it in another medium, and I am just excited to see how they adapt that story.
Indeed. This is already surpassed any of my expectations, mainly because I didn't have any to begin with. in a very impressive way. And if they can pull this off and kind of follow the one cardinal rule that I do give like the original X-Men 90s cartoon credit for, is using the stories from the comic to tell the stories in the cartoons as well.
Yeah, that's something they did very well. And it seems like they are just continuing right on through with that trend. I'm going to love to see how they adapt this particular one. But another little bit of little story crumbs that they dropped in there. Apparently, Magneto can touch Rogue and not suffer any ill effects. And so they have a little bit of romantic tension seemingly in these episodes, and we can already see the love triangle or, you know, jealousy arc that's being set up for Gambit.
Yep. I thought that happened in the comics though. But I don't remember.
What them being able to touch each other?
Yeah. There's something, but I don't remember if it was this Magneto, if it was like when he was young Magneto, like not young Magneto, but when it was like a younger version of Magneto was able to, like, he could touch Rogue without getting it harmed at all. I seem to remember that. So I think that's probably where they're pulling from this.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't remember that storyline exactly, but you know, Rogue used to be a ne'er-do-well, an evil hero or an evil villain. And so, you know, it would make sense that they had a relationship when that was all going on.
Yeah, I think so. And it's a nice, interesting, like you said, love triangle to kind of throw into the mix.
It kind of takes the camera or the spotlight off of sad Wolverine, who is just constantly pining after Jean Grey in a very weird way. But I think the fact that two Jeans are there, and who is one an imposter and who is the imposter, is going to open up some very juicy soap opera like details that, you know, were one of the draws of the X-Men comics. And certainly getting it into the cartoon is very interesting as well. But, yeah, I think we just cannot wait for the next one to come out. And so, you know, we'll see. I think we'll do our typical thing that we do when the series is wrapped up. We'll give our thoughts on the whole shebang. But who knows? Maybe it'll be so intriguing that we'll have to talk about it. We're just going to have to wait and see.
That's it. I agree. But you know what we shouldn't wait and see, or at least shouldn't lollygag on?
What?
You want to talk some trailers?
Let's talk about some exciting trailers, because they were dropping them fast and furious. You know, I often heard the name Alien Romulus. Alien Rhombus.
Alien Romulan. Yep.
Yeah. That's the joke that everyone made when the trailer dropped. But I often heard of Alien Romulus on the movie blogs and the various pop culture websites that I frequent on a daily basis. But it was one of those things where I just kind of thought to myself, okay, well, this is probably never coming out. even when they were like, principal filming has wrapped on Alien Romulus, I'm like, well, this will be just shelved and I'll never see it. Because I don't know if you remember, but not too long ago, the director of District 9, I believe it was Neil Blomkamp.
Yep.
Had a treatment for another Alien movie starring Sigourney Weaver, and it had Michael Biehn in it. They had all sorts of amazing concept art, and it was going to be a thing, and it got really far, and then they made Prometheus instead.
Good call, right? That was a good call?
Yep. Yeah, although Prometheus is getting a bit of a reevaluation by the public at large. And like many things, I'm not happy about it because the reevaluation is, hey, you know what? This Prometheus is actually pretty good. They should have ruined it by adding any alien stuff. And I'm saying, what? I feel like I'm taking. This is wild. I can't. What? Huh?
Yeah, I mean, that was a swing. For a franchise that felt like it started to lose some steam after, what, 3? Like,
Or with 3, I think, depending on who you are. I think, at least at the time, 3 was a big letdown, I think.
Well, for me it was, but I think that was only because it was connected to Aliens 2. If it wasn't, if it was just an Aliens movie without that amazing second movie ending, then I think 3 right. would have been great. I think 3 could have been really good, but because it was attached to Aliens, 3 has no meaning or place in my brain pan, really.
Yeah, because it took all the story threads from 2 and it said, you know what, these are great, but let's throw them in the fucking trash.
Yeah. You like this stuff? Nope.
Too fucking bad. It's just like, wow, it's F-bombs all over the place tonight. Hope there are no sensitive listeners out there. And if there are, I'm sorry. We watched the Alien Romulus trailer, and wow, what a return to form. I have definitely heard the critique that it's they are not trying anything wildly different, and to that I say good.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, because we've seen, because guess what? The Alien franchise has tried a lot of different stuff. And I am excited to get back to just a scary alien stalking people around a spaceship and being real terrifying, because that's what I loved about Alien and Aliens. And this trailer, even though it is light on the details, seems like it's going to deliver.
Oh, no, you heard me. There are definitely a couple of moments while watching this where I was going, nope.
Mm-mm. Yes, I certainly, having a swarm of facehuggers chase me down the cramped hallways of a retro-futuristic spaceship is not a fear that I knew that I had, but I do have it now. That's right. It's odd that, like, when you're talking about a sequel, and the answer is always to just do more of it, put more of those things in there, and that is like what makes it better, is often that's not often a good advice, but for the Aliens franchise it's almost always worked. Like Alien, they had one alien, terrifying, one face hugger, awful, terrifying, hated it,
yep,
it's scary. Aliens, spoopy. More of an, it's still scary, more of an action movie. But guess what? They had a bunch of aliens. But still, on that one, you only ever saw the facehuggers one at a time. This one, they're like, nah. How would you like 20 facehuggers just
booking it
towards you, and you have no time to react? Because they're not just hiding under a bed and popping out when you least expect it. No, this is a flood of facehuggers, and you're going to get your face hugged.
Yeah, they be wanting to impregnate something.
Yep. You're gonna get a little baby alien in there, and it's gonna come out bad for you.
Yeah, I did not know. I too did not know I had that fear until I saw it, and I was like, oh yes, no, that is quite creepy. No, thank you. No, thank you. But yes, thank you. I will watch that.
Yes.
A return to form, making it spoopy. Either make it spoopy or make it actiony, but don't do Prometheus. I don't know what that was, but I didn't need that. And
you know, it was trying something different, and you got to give it credit for trying something different, I guess. I mean, but
well, sure. I don't need a Joker origin story. I don't really need to know where the Xenomorphs come from. Like,
no, I don't especially need that explained to me. It's the answer is that it's sort of a depressed android who is sad that it met God and it wasn't what it expected. Just like the scientists who are sad that they met a type of deity to them and it wasn't what they expected. Just like not living up to expectations are like the overarching theme of Alien Covenant and Prometheus. But this seems like it's getting back to basics. Just gore, blood, scary hallways, super atmospheric. Directed by Fede Alvarez, who is a fairly new director, but one whose bona fides are already impressive. They're definitely make you excited to see this. The screenplay, he wrote the screenplay to the Evil Dead, or just Evil Dead, that sort of relaunch, Don't Breathe 2. It's going to be scary, is what I'm trying to say. And what was very encouraging is I heard an interview with the director, and he was saying that this movie is inspired by a cut scene from Aliens, the movie. And the cut scene he referenced is one of my favorite scenes that they cut from Aliens. And it's the scene on Hadley's Hope before the colonists find the ship with the eggs inside, and the infection starts. And there's a scene where there's like a kid riding a big wheel down a hallway, and you know they show sort of like what life is like before it gets ruined, and it makes the moment later when the Marines are going through the ruins of the same place, and they run into the big wheel, and they run into these artifacts that you see people using. It makes it hit a lot harder. I was always disappointed that they took that out, but
yeah.
The director was inspired by the fact that like. He was really inspired by the question, like, what was it like for these young colonists who have decided to basically dedicate their entire life to terraforming a planet, the results of which they never may fully see. And then all this terrifying stuff happens to people who are just basically there to create a life for themselves. And I was so heartened by that because, like, that is a question that has also fascinated me for a really long time. So if this movie gets anywhere close to answering any of that stuff, it will be, like, very wish-fulfilling for me personally.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm happy that you're going to potentially get that.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, like, it's one of those things, like, it's just a teaser trailer, so you're hoping for the best, but sometimes, sure. You know, like, the best parts make it in the trailer, then the rest of it is just like, oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. So, you know, if it kind of comes from, I think that's an interesting premise to start from, too.
Yeah, it's at least an interesting thing to be inspired by. Yeah. And he said that they consulted with both James Cameron and Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott serves as a producer on the movie. So he was probably involved a little bit more closely. But he said he screened the movie for both Cameron and Scott, and they both loved it, which is, you know, great.
That's high praise.
Definitely high praise. And he was talking about the fact that he would send, like, rough cuts to both directors, and they would give him notes, but they would both have very different notes. Like, they were both, like, looking at very different parts of the movie, and their notes have never overlapped, which I think is a very fascinating... It's a very interesting way to get your movie made, and it's definitely has that reverential quality that I think fans are probably looking for, but it's also a very brave way to do anything creative to go to these titans of the industry and be like, hey, what do you think? Note, just give me whatever notes you got.
And I'm willing to take the negative. If Cameron gave me one note that was negative, I'd be like, well, I'm out of this business forever. I can't do it. I'm a hack. And they'll be like, you made two movies, but Cameron didn't like my rough cut. I'm out later. Yeah, I couldn't picture it. I think it's cool. But it's also kind of not surprising that they had wildly different notes because they are very different directors.
Very much.
You know, and kind of their focuses and stuff. But, I mean, getting that's like a master class and a half of, you know, learning how to direct, but, like, being able to have that access, that's huge. And I appreciate that. That actually makes me like this even a little bit more.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one more thing that I saw in this interview with the director. He said that they had called up James Cameron to answer one, like, specific question that really inspired them to create this, which, aside from that deleted scene, was when in Aliens, when the Marines say, oh, great, another bug hunt, does that mean they've seen xenomorphs before?
Oh, I need to know.
You can't
leave me in suspense.
Did not answer.
Fuck!
He didn't say the answer, but that is definitely like a really interesting question to ask James Cameron. And I also want to know the answer.
I need to know.
I guess maybe we'll have to watch Alien Romulus to find out.
Because is it a euphemism? Or is it a real thing? Like, another bug hunt is just what the Marines were considering any sort of mission, like simple mission? Or was it really because they fought it? That's a great question.
Yeah. Yeah. Super. I mean, that is somebody who has watched Alien 2 a billion times. That is just has like, because one of the things that Aliens does so well is world building, because it like, they have all these one-off lines that give you texture and like insight into the scope of the greater conflict and how the world, the universe works in this piece of fiction. And so, you know, that's just like, these are the natural questions that you have because they don't stop to like explain to the audience via exposition all the things they might be confused by. They just kind of put a piece of information out there and let your imagination run wild. And that's truly the best kind of world building in a movie. And so I'm just glad that this is a movie that wasn't like, oh yeah, you know, I've never seen Alien before, but I love the concept of, you know, throat stuff. So anyway, this is my Aliens movie. But yeah. Really looking forward to it. What's another trailer you want to talk about?
So we talked about a good trailer. I got to talk about something that I need to ask you. You've mentioned a few times before. You were kind of gothy when you grew up, right?
Oh yeah, yes, very much so.
Yeah. What's your take on the Crow?
Well, I'll tell you this, John. I once dressed up as the Crow for Halloween. The whole nine yards, black. Sort of wavy wig, full face paint with the sort of clown pattern on there. It is the only time I have been given a number, a woman's number unasked for.
Oh, you had it like that.
Yeah. Somebody came up to me and said, here's my number, the Crow. And I was walking on air. Until I realized, wait a minute, I am wearing full face paint and a wig.
She doesn't know what I look like.
This person has no idea what I really look like. And Forrest in high school had a bit of an acne problem. So anyway, yes, me and the Crow are like this. And if you can't see me, I'm, you know, making
googly eyes. At the
yeah, sure. Earth? But I'm okay. Making. I'm crossing my fingers.
Fair. So how did you feel about them wanting to relaunch The Crow? You know, there's the Brandon Lee movie, R.I.P. from 1994. Then there was, a bunch of direct-to-video Crow movies.
There was one The Crow 2 went to theaters, and I know because I saw it in theaters. And it was...
Should have assumed.
Yes, it was very disappointing. Then there was a bunch of direct-to-video ones. One starring Eddie Furlong.
No way.
Yeah.
That I did not know. Okay.
Yeah, that's a true fact. But I have to say, John, when I heard about this one coming out, I'm always a little bit suspicious, because I feel like The Crow is like an artifact of it really feels like an artifact of the 90s.
Totes.
And it also feels like it was a sort of like unbelievable tragedy, like the movie. The fact that it was still came out and its lead star was killed during its production when a prop gun was sort of in a ghoulish echo of what happened on the set of Rust recently. Mm-hmm. There was a piece of debris or a improperly loaded firearm on set, and there is a scene in which I think his name's Eric Draven.
Yep.
Is gunned down by some no good nicks, and like Brandon Lee literally died. It is like, I loved that movie, but the more you think about it, you're like, Jesus Christ, this should just been like thrown in the trash.
I mean, it's tough. You're right. It was tough for me to sit there and want to like watch it knowing this, especially being a fan of his dad, right? Like, and Bruce Lee was gone from us way too soon too. And then to have this happen, it just seemed like it didn't seem right.
Certainly. And there was that, like, whatever, take for it what you will, but there was that, the rumor of the curse.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what can you do about that? Like if when people are going to be looking at a bunch of different stuff,
People love to see patterns where there is nothing. But yeah, it was a weird movie to kind of come to grips with, because I did love it a lot. I loved it from an aesthetic and sort of sonic standpoint, and it was really like spoke to me as a weird goth kid. But
so with all that preamble, does this new Crow movie speak to you?
Well, I was reading it before the trailer dropped. I was reading an article with the head of interview with the creators, and they were talking about how it was neither based on the Brandon Lee movie or the comics. It wasn't based on either. And at that point, I kind of sat back and said, well, then why?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't you come up with a new idea if you're going to take just like the broadest concept from a piece of media back in the you know, from 30 years ago or 20 years ago or whatever. And you're just going to be like, well, it's kind of based on the idea. I mean, then based on your own idea.
Then do something else and just have people be like, oh, this is kind of like The Crow, but not as good.
Yeah, there you go. Because right. There's a lot of, like, I think when you attach a beloved franchise to your new movie, you're setting yourself up for that comparison. And certainly, well, I'll tell you this, John. If the trailer has told me anything, this version of The Crow will be very gross.
Yep.
So if you're looking for a much more gross Crow, then I guess you're in luck. Also, if you're like, hey, I love Pennywise from It. What if Pennywise from It was a sexy ghost from beyond who is only out for revenge? It is also immortal because he hangs out with a crow.
Or you want sexy Pennywise from Florida.
Is this Florida Man?
Kind of feel like the makeup and... There. I mean, the makeup and kind of, you know, the extraneous tattoos kind of just gives him that either Florida dude or, you know, I'm not the first one to make this realization, kind of like Snyder Joker-esque in a weird way.
It does have that Leto Joker vibe. It's a shame that like that design was so derided and so like cringe that like anything close to that, people can't have face tattoos in movies without inviting that comparison. But this, I guess, is a step beyond that because there is like a physicality aspect to the both of these actors that shares more than a single commonality. So there is a little bit of like, I am reminded of this character that I don't like to think about. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's fair. I've constantly reminded when you're not trying to even be reminded about it. Just like turn around. Yeah, this is, I mean, I dug the movie. I read the comics as a kid, probably. Well, I wouldn't even be like I was too young to read them after that point. But, you know, I remember reading through them and was like, oh, man, these are great. And I was happy with where they were. And I never was like, we don't need another Crow. We're good. And watching this trailer, that still has confirmed that for me. I still don't need another Crow.
Yeah.
You know, it was just so, I don't know, just it just seems so out of place. Just let the first one be. It's got Ernie Hudson in it. You know it's the best one just because it has Ernie Hudson in it.
Yeah.
Who I just discovered today is almost 80 years old. And
incredible.
And I need to say, if I can look that good as he does now, I'd be doing all right.
Yeah, tell me what your secret is, Ernie Hudson. Ernie Hudson, almost 80 years old, was recently interviewed about his role in the currently in theaters Ghostbusters.
Frozen Empire?
Deep Freeze, yep. said that he's still a working actor, job to job, which is... sucks.
I mean, yeah, give him his dues. This is amazing. Yeah. I can't believe it. Like, I don't look that good now. I look older than him now.
Oh yeah, me too. Yeah, yeah. No, I'll never look as good as Ernie Hudson, but that was never in the cards for me, so
that's fair. I knew I didn't have a chance either.
Yeah.
Oh well, what are you gonna do?
What are you going to do? Well, this new movie doesn't have Ernie Hudson in it, but it does have a bunch of blood. So if you love buckets of gross blood and a guy falling into a puddle and going to Crowverse, then go for it. It's all for you. It's just going to be a Liam Neeson revenge flick with a younger dude. So also, like, I think that same actor is starring in a movie called like Boy Kills World, which seems to be weirdly
similar.
Yeah, theme wise. So I don't know. It wasn't for me. Didn't grab me. Didn't excite me. Especially as a fan of old Crow movies, I just am wondering what's going on, why it exists, and I don't know. I'm not gonna see it. Maybe if I'm trapped on a plane, and I'm gonna watch it like 65, maybe.
Okay, all right. You're on a plane. The last question. You're on a plane. You have a choice between this Crow movie or 65 again.
Uh huh.
What are you watching?
I'm probably watching the Crow movie. It'd be funnier if I said 65. I'm just watching 65 again. But if I have like. That movie sucks. Watch that movie again. Don't make me do it.
I won't make you do it. You're all right.
Okay. Thank God. Thank God.
You're all right.
It's once is enough with 65. Any other trailers you want to talk about, John?
Nah. I got my two. I feel good. I feel
okay.
Good.
Okay. All right. I hope that... Good. You feel comfortable. I feel comfortable. I hope everyone out there feels comfortable with the episode of You've All Settled In, but too bad because it's over. I pulled the rug out from under you. That's the Crow. That's what the Crow does.
Always about that rug pulling that Crow.
That's right. That's his measure of revenge. Let's roll into the part of the podcast that everyone is tuning in for. That's right, the ending. First off, we got to thank Burton M6 for all the incredible music on our show. Check out a link to his Fiverr page in our show notes. You have seen the proof. The music is good. Some might say the best part of this podcast. I don't disagree. So check him out if you are in the needs of that kind of service. There's also links to all of our social media in our show notes. Our show notes are a veritable cornucopia of ways to get in touch with us and interesting information. Our show notes are definitely just chock-a-block full of great stuff. And one of those great things is a link to our Discord. You can join that for free, and you can come on down. You can discuss our episodes. You can discuss what's on your mind, if it's geeky or not, or you just want to share some cool toys you got. The Pop Saga Discord is the place for you. There's also links to our other stuff, but who cares about that? Join the Discord! And with that said, we want to say to all of you out there, wherever you are, however you're choosing to listen to us, we hope that you are feeling happy and healthy. And if you're not, that's okay too. But I'm going to throw it over to John for the final word.
Remember, folks, I have one other hot take to give you. Etouffee is just dried gumbo.
That scared the shit out of me.
Hey, thank you for tuning in to all my super fans. Hope you coming back again. Got a shout out to Fresca. I know you riding with me as we pull up in the Hyundai Daily City. You want the hype? I gotcha. Gotta keep it locked right here on Pop Saga. Woo! Pop Saga, let's go.